In 1755, on All Saints' Day, about 9 o'clock in the morning, one of the deadliest earthquakes in history hit Lisbon, Portugal. The cathedral was packed full of worshippers. It was deadly because they were all inside. The building collapsed upon them, and those around the city were killed subsequently by fires and also the deadly tsunami that swept over the city. The estimate between 30 to 50,000 souls went to meet their God on that All Saints' Day. This troubled the intelligentsia of Europe, particularly the notion of God and his goodness. This is the question within the theological science of theodicy, how God interacts, so to speak, with his creation. But 45 years before this, the philosopher, mathematician, statesman Gottfried Leibniz had written a treatise, Theodicee, on this topic, and one of the main premises of which was that God created the best of all possible worlds. This troubled the anti-Catholic Voltaire soon after the earthquake. Now, Voltaire had lost whatever shreds of faith in God he had had as a young man. There's a whole history to that. But he used to end his letters with the phrase, écraser l'infâme, destroy or erase, eradicate the infamous thing, meaning the church, which harkens back to Cato and his phrase at the end of all of his speeches, Cartagena de Linda Est, Carthage must be destroyed. Voltaire, it was the church that had to be destroyed. And he saw this confluence of the earthquake, its deadliness, and Leibniz's, to his mind, Leibniz's ridiculous claim that God created the best of all possible worlds as a means of penning his own work, which he did, called Candide, or Optimism is the subtitle. And it's a long, rambling farce, a satire, really, on the notion of God, his creation, and that all things work out for the best, which Voltaire denied. That is, the notion of God's providence, his eternal law, manifested in each creature, moving each creature towards its final end. So, does God do evil? And how is this connected with our own nefarious evil deeds, great or small? Why does God permit evil? The church's tradition distinguishes two kinds of evil. To help clarify this question, the first is physical evil, and that, strictly speaking, is evil in a nature or in a being. Now, evil may be defined as any sort of privation in a being. Any time a nature or a being is missing something that it some way should have, that is evil. This could be something bodily, a material, like missing an arm, a finger, a leg, some disease, injury, are all physical evils. But there's also physical evils that are less material, nostalgia, homesickness, a broken heart, things that we perceive as evil, our nature is diminished. And this can even be experienced in animals. Then there is moral evil. Now, the churches distinguish moral evil from physical evil. And moral evil is a deliberate choice of evil by a rational or an intellectual being, that is, an angel or a man. So evil, it's evil in a moral act, and it's where a moral act is missing some aspect of its existence, of what should make it good, what it should be, and sometimes missing something small, some slightly impure or selfish intention, and sometimes very big, like the intrinsically evil acts of fornication, adultery, even abortion, murder, theft, lying, are all moral evils. So we find moral evils in a will. That's where they ultimately reside, in a bent will, a will not ordered to the good, and some sort of deliberate choice of evil. Now, for evil to be defined and to be described, it must be compared to some sort of rule or measure. And the rule or measure of evil, St. Thomas says, is God himself. So God, by definition, cannot do evil, moral evil at least, for he is the ruler measure of all goodness. And it's more than that, his goodness is objective. God does always what is best, in at least in the long run. When we say the long run, that means from our perspective, because what is the best isn't always manifest in the here and now. As the Catechism says, creation was made in statu vitae, in a state of journeying towards its ultimate perfection. So in some sense, the 6 days of creation are not yet finished. They've yet to be accomplished. And they'll only really be finished at the end of time. That is, time is one aspect, one accidental aspect of creation itself. We would describe moral evil as a sin, some act that does not fulfill the rule or measure of God's eternal law, manifested in our natures as natural law, what we call the natural moral law. So all moral evil is in some way a failure in love. It is not willing the good that should be willed. Every act has some good in it, sometimes a lot of good. As a matter of fact, the poet Juvenal said that corruptio optimi pessima, that the corruption of the best is the worst. And the more good an act should be, the more evil it can be, which is why sexual acts are so wrong and why acts against life are so wrong, because they are both very great goods. And even a little bit of corruption corrupts them quite a bit, makes them quite evil. That is, acts against them, murder and sexual sins. Now, the reason why moral evil is so much worse than physical evil. We usually distinguish that God can indirectly do physical evil. And that is, he has created the universe in such a way that there's distinctions, inequality, beings rely upon other beings for existence, lions eat deer, good for the lion, bad for the deer, and fire burns up oxygen at an inanimate level, of course. So, in terms of moral evil, physical evil always ends with this world. It's part of the manifestation of this world in its ongoing journey towards perfection. So physical evil all can only have temporal ramifications. It will always end at the end of time in heaven. In paradise, there will be no physical evil. But moral evil, that is the evil of sin, can have eternal ramifications. That is, mortal sin in particular has ramifications that go beyond this world into the eternal self-exclusion from beatitude and the company of the blessed and with God Himself, that we have given the name in our tradition of hell. So the fathers of the church have described that moral evil is incommensurably, as the adverb used in the catechism, incommensurably worse than physical evil. And it's a teaching of the church that not even a small amount of moral evil may be done deliberately to bring about even the greatest of goods. St. John Henry, Cardinal Newman, went so far as to say that the Catholic Church holds it better for the sun and moon to drop from heaven, for the earth to fail, and for all the many millions on it to die of starvation in extremest agony, as far as temporal affliction goes, than that one soul, I will not say should be lost, but should commit one single venial sin, should tell one willful untruth, or should steal one poor farthing without excuse. Pretty extreme words from chapter 5 of his Apologia, his defense of the Catholic faith. It's not easy to read, never mind to live out, but it is true nonetheless. We cannot do even an ounce of moral evil for the sake of a greater good. So we say that God never does moral evil, but he permits it. So he indirectly wills physical evil, and he permits moral evil, but always for the sake of a greater good. It's easier to see why he permits physical evil in some ways. We have to have some level of suffering in order to grow in virtue and holiness, even at a natural level, never mind at the supernatural level. It's more difficult to see physical evil in its eternal significance, but we could see in the terms of theodicy that the earthquake in Lisbon although it created much physical evil, was in some ways willed by God to bring many souls to their eternal reward, at least their eternal judgment. We all have our time in this earth, and even Voltaire is going to suffer his own physical evil at the end of his life, which he did, and facing the judgment of the God he did not, in whom he did not believe. It's a moral evil that creates more of the mystery. Why did God create beings who could reject him? And the only, well, one of the answers to this, Saint John Paul II wrote a very beautiful letter on suffering, we could say physical evil, and meditating also on moral evil, called Salvifici Doloris, which he promulgated on February the 11th, 1984, which is Our Lady of Lourdes, the patroness of the sick. And he discusses there the notion of evil and God's relation to evil, using the story of Job as a springboard and a framework. And he says that God always brings good out of evil in ways that we cannot see in this life. We may see glimmers of them, some glimpses. And sometimes we can look back even on our own sins and see what good God brought from them, whether it be repentance or some knowledge or even the capacity to help others. One answer to the overall question of moral evil is that God, in creating free beings, had to give them, in some way, the free choice to love or not to love, which Dostoevsky says is really the ultimate question. That is, are we going to love God above all things or love ourselves above all things? It's the question St. Augustine posed also in his tome, The City of God. Where does our treasure really reside? But we cannot ever really escape what St. Paul calls the mysterium iniquitatis, the mystery of iniquity. There are evils in history and continuing into our own day that are very mysterious. The Jewish Holocaust, the ongoing Holocaust of abortion, the current beginning Holocaust of euthanasia, and even all the questions concerning the COVID and protocols, the lockdowns, the bizarre reaction of politicians and pundits. And we see this moving towards some sort of climactic end. The Catechism is very clear in our tradition that our creation is moving towards a perfection, but that perfection is going to be a transcendent one, not one here and now in this world, but one that will only be manifested in a world beyond this one. This is a point made very clearly by the great Thomist Joseph Pieper in a 1967 book, Hope in History, where he says the historical development of the world will culminate ultimately in death, in the destruction of the world, which is corroborated in the Catechism in paragraph 675, that Christ will come again. And I'll just quote this Catechism section to end off with your thoughts for how to, and maybe end off after that with a little thought about how to respond to the current trials we're facing in this world. Before Christ, there's a quote, before Christ's second coming, the church must pass through a final trial that will shake the faith of many believers. The persecution that accompanies her pilgrimage on earth will unveil the mystery of iniquity in the form of a religious deception, offering men an apparent solution to their problems at the price of apostasy from the truth. The supreme religious deception is that of the Antichrist, a pseudo-messianism by which man glorifies himself in place of God and of his Messiah come in the flesh. And the paragraph just after that, in 676, says that the message or the promise of the Antichrist will take the form of an intrinsically perverse form of secular messianism that is seeking really salvation here in this world alone. So I guess our hope, and this goes back to Pope Benedict XVI's second encyclical, Spes Salvi, that our hope as Catholics, as Christians, as believers, is not in this world, but in the next. And even in this world, our hope should not be in the material things of this world, in food, money, shelter, or even in companionship, but rather in God alone. Now, hopefully, we have at least some of those other things to maintain us, to support us unto the end. And even through that final trial, whenever it may come, whether it is soon, whether it is yet in the near or distant future, that we maintain that hope and that keeping our eyes fixed on heaven, whenever the hour or day may come, whether it happened like in 1755 in a sudden earthquake while worshipping God. There are far worse ways to meet thy God than in the middle of an All Saints Day Mass, maybe just after receiving the Holy Eucharist, or in good old age, seeing perhaps your children's children around you. So on that happy note, let us keep our faith, keep our prayer lives intact, and our minds about and wits about us. Prayers for one and all, and for all Catholic Insight community. God bless you all.